from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting hip. We are finally... First of all, some of the questions that you or I might have had are finally being answered. One that is not being answered yet is, how exactly are we... What's the deal that we're making with all these formerly high-ranking Iraqis who are surrendering? All the guys in the deck of cards. What's the deal? We're making a deal, obviously. Because despite the absence of details in the stories about their surrenders, almost none of them, you can bet your bottom dollar, have been arrested, pursued, detected. They've turned themselves in. What's the deal? We don't know that yet, but we do know what the U.S. is doing to try to elicit information. U.S. military units have been breaking Saddam supporters with long interrogation sessions in which they've been forced to listen to heavy metal music and children's songs, says one U.S. operative. Trust me, it works. The idea, says Sergeant Mark Hadzel, is to break a subject's resistance by annoying that person with what some Iraqis would consider culturally offensive music. The songs that are being played include Bodies from the Vin Diesel XXX movie soundtrack and Metallica's Enter Sandman. These people haven't heard heavy metal before, Sergeant Hadzel explains. They can't take it. Also being played, music by the purple dinosaur, Barney.
Yeah, I'll talk!
Hey, sounds like a tap gig coming up. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. You never know. What you do know is that this is another edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
It's summertime, 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 summertime.
Summertime, 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 summertime,
summertime, summertime, summertime, summertime, summertime, summertime.
It's summertime.
Sunday, before they resign. man, watching all the fish swim away. He no work, he just sleep and play, sitting here on the sand. Sunny land, coconut coming down all the time. Milk, she's sweeter than honey wine, sitting here on the sand. He's a loco man. Loco man, pretty boy, he got a plan, doing it just because he can. Yeah, he loco like ice cold, cold, cold. Loco man, sit in sand when he want to sweat, go in ocean to get him wet, sitting here on the sand. He's a loco man. Loco man, crazy boy, he got a plan, doing it just because he can. Yeah, he loco like ice cold, cold, cold. Loco man, sit in sand when he want to sweat, go in ocean to get him wet, sitting here on the sand. Sitting here on the sand.
That's the local man you're talking about.
Sitting here on the sand. That's right. Local man.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of... I wasn't laughing at the homeless. Welcoming you to another edition of the show. Kind of a, you know, it's Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of summer, even though it's calendarily inaccurate. But it's a feeling. It's all about feelings. It's all about culturally offensive music. It's all about, is the new Iraq not Iraq at all? The new Iraq may be Iran. We'll get to that. But first, spurred by all the talk on this broadcast about the stage management techniques of the Bush administration in recent public appearances, a listener asks in an email to this broadcast, did you notice the background they worked out at the welcoming ceremony for the Japanese prime minister at President Bush's Crawford, Texas ranch this week? Behind the outdoor podium at the arrival, this emailer continues, the grass was mid-shin high. It's late May in Texas, i.e. that field hasn't had its first cut for the 03 season. For all the farm experience deprived out there, it behooves me to point out, says this emailer, that the field was nonetheless full of huge rolled hay bales. So close together had they actually been sitting there as a result of being cut from that field, the grass would have had to have been 8 feet high when it was cut and baled, and then left out to rot in the rain all winter since they were cut last fall. For the farm belt, it's the TV equivalent of arranging the potted plants, the fire in the hearth at just the right height, getting the flag on the staff furled just perfect, and setting the chair in exactly the right spot off right or left in the frame, and then leaving 8x10s in the mantle of Courtney Love on stage, drunk, stone, and flashing at the cameraman. It looks stupid. All right, we'll have to trust him until we get more details. News from space, however, ladies and gentlemen, will be difficult to come by, at least so insofar as the Columbia Inquiry is concerned. Civilian members, this is from the Scotsman. We have to find this out from the Scotsman, ladies and gentlemen. Civilian members of the expert group investigating the Columbia space shuttle disaster have been put on the NASA payroll, thus ensuring that much of the inquiry will be carried out in secret. The highly controversial move will see the five civilian representatives on the Columbia Accident Investigation Board, or CABE, each receive executive-level salaries of up to $134,000 a year. Who said hush money? Hush! If the civilians who were supposedly recruited to ensure the investigation was independent from NASA had not been hired by the agency, the board would have had to meet publicly, justify any closed-door sessions, and keep transcripts and minutes that would become public records. The CAIB, the CABE, has exploited a legal loophole which allows boards composed entirely of federal employees to conduct their business in private. Seven members of the 13-member board are serving military officers, two are federal transportation officials, and one is a NASA employee. Retired Navy Admiral Harold Gaiman, who is leading the board, is being paid $142,500 from another federal agency. Now that the remaining five civilians have been put on the NASA payroll temporarily, all the board members are federal employees. Says Stephen Aftergood, head of the Project on Governmental Secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists, they perpetrated a trick that I believe is unseemly. They're playing games with the law. By going behind closed doors, it has damaged the principles of open government. They've reinforced the notion that it's not possible to conduct an honest inquiry in public. Gaiman said guaranteeing anonymity to witnesses, such as NASA employees and contractors, was the only way of ensuring a complete, rich, deep review of the shuttle program and establishing what went wrong with the Columbia mission. The purpose is to find out things that they would not volunteer under questioning, he told a U.S. Senate hearing. Regarding the funding of the five civilian panel members, who include former astronaut Sally Ride, Gaiman added, "This board is completely independent. NASA keeps the books for me, but I spend that money, so somehow suggesting the members of this board are influenced by the book, by the way the records are kept, I find to be somewhat naive." John McCain expressed dismay at the secrecy arrangement. So they're living in a cave. Thank you very much. And speaking of space, the Pentagon's, from the day Donald Rumsfeld, oh, this is actually a trade. You could read this with trades music. Haven't read from the trades for so long. Ladies and gentlemen, let's do it. Here we go. I say it and it happens. That's, people ask me, why do I like radio? You just heard it. I said it and it happened. Tell me where else in life that happens. So I will read the trades for you, ladies and gentlemen, from E.E. Times, the Bible of the electronic engineering industry. Unilateralism goes to space. I'll read it for you. You don't have to be an engineer. I'm not. From the day Donald Rumsfeld became defense secretary, the Pentagon's favorite buzzword for space technology has been transformation. But even some of the United States' closest allies worry about another buzzword being used in subtler ways at the National Reconnaissance Office. Negation. The nation's largest intelligence agency, NRO, is in charge of all U.S. spy satellites. They're now talking openly with the U.S. Air Force Space Command about actively denying the use of space for intelligence purposes to any other nation at any time. Not just adversaries, but even longtime allies, according to NRO Director Peter Teets. Teets suggests that U.S. resources for military, civilian, and commercial platforms in space be combined to provide persistence in total situational awareness for the benefit of the nation's warfighters. If allies don't like the new paradigm of space dominance, said Air Force Secretary James Roche, they'll just have to learn to accept it. The allies will have no veto power. Beginning next year, NRO will be in charge of the new offensive counter-space program, which will come up with plans to specifically deny the use of near-Earth space to other nations, said Teets. The program will include two components, the counter-communication system designed to disrupt other nations' communications networks from space, and the counter-surveillance reconnaissance system formed to prevent other countries from using advanced intelligence-gathering technology in space. And, of course, a Canadian complains. Negation implies treating allies poorly, says Robert Lawson, senior policy advisor for nonproliferation in the Canadian Department of Foreign Affairs. It implies treaty busting. The the policy began to be hinted at in a Rumsfeld Commission report of January 2001, which warned of a space Pearl Harbor if the United States did not utterly dominate low-Earth geosynchronous and polar orbital planes, as well as all launch facilities and ground stations to exploit space for battlefield advantage. The European Union complained in no uncertain terms 5 years ago that the NRO and National Security Agency were already using global electronic snooping programs outside the boundaries of mutual NATO advantage. The European Space Agency chimed in last fall when the Defense Department tried to bully it into changing its design plans for a navigational satellite system called Galileo. While Canada is supposed to be an equal member of the North American Air Defense Command near Colorado Springs, representatives of Canada's military and civilian establishment are complaining that they're not allowed to use space-based communications and intelligence in the same way the United States can. General Judd Blaisdell, director of the Air Force Space Operations Office, said early this year, "We are so dominant in space that I pity a country that would come up against us." U.S. unilateralism in space was codified in a September 20, 2002 document entitled The National Security Strategy of the United States. After the administration renounced the anti-ballistic missile treaty last year, Rumsfeld made it clear that the abrogation of treaty constraints in the use of radar and tracking devices was not just for the benefit of a missile defense system, but to build better unilateral networks to manage the planet from space. NRO Director Teets says that it's artificial to see communications tools, intelligence tools, and missile defense tools as separate. In reality, he said, the programs all feed into each other and help reinforce the Pentagon's overwhelming space dominance. Communications, new satellites are being rolled out for the Defense Information Systems Agency under the management of NRO. The advanced, extremely high-frequency satellite is the successor to MilStar, Ronald Reagan's dream of a narrow-band satellite that can survive a nuclear war. That's a nice dream. The Transformational Communication Office, established last October, will spend more than $10 billion in coming years to define a network of joint NRO-NASA satellites that will bring internet-like space communication to terrestrial battlefields. Transformational satellites, or TSATs, will be broadband satellites linked with advanced, extremely high-frequency satellites. Teets says to Congress that what's already in place allows total dominance of the planet in any possible battle scenario and in all possible venues. The new logo of the Air Force Space Operations Office says it all. Air and Space Operations, the superiority complex. This transformational use of space resources may play well to a majority of the American people who show signs of favoring unilateralism since the end of the Iraq War. But it's causing upper echelon defections. Several analysts at the Naval War College and Air Force Academy published essays warning against assuming that the United States can maintain sole dominance of space. And in March, retired Brigadier General Owen Lentz, former Director of Intelligence for Space Command, publicly voiced his opposition to using space intelligence assets for first strike warfare. Just because the strategy worked in Iraq, Lentz warned, does not mean it should become a pattern for future action against others. Unquote. Unilateralism in space, ladies and gentlemen. It's just a question that lingers in the air, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature, but only one of many here on the broadcast. Time now for another one. Live from Moscow, Paul McCartney sings the theme of the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
He was in Moscow, you know. This is not him live, of course. Lies must be told to entertain the audience. According to the reader's representative, or ombudsman at the Los Angeles Times, one story on All Things Considered came directly from the Los Angeles Times without attribution. On April 2nd, LA Times reporter Cara Mia DeMassa had a story in the paper about how towns around America are creating memorials to 9/11 using pieces from the World Trade Center. On April 4th, All Things Considered's Michelle Norris interviewed a number of people about their ideas for memorials using pieces of the World Trade Center. She spoke to two of the same people who had been interviewed for the LA Times. Bruce Drake is the vice president of NPR News. He says the LA Times story was, in fact, the inspiration for Michelle Norris's interviews about these memorials. We always give other news organizations credit when they break hard news stories, but news organizations are less assiduous about it when it comes to feature material. The line becomes less bright. Our material and individuals we feature in it is also often picked up by others and not credited. In retrospect, I would have leaned towards crediting the Times for this, since I could not find anyone else who did this story, unquote. Yeah, NPR did Apologies of the Week for a while, too. This from the New York Post. Robin Gregg, a freelance journalist who has infrequently contributed to the New York Post, recently sold a story to the newspaper that he now admits he plagiarized from the National Enquirer. The story concerned the relationship between Walmart and the Kathy Lee label. Mr. Gregg did not mention to his editor that it was in any way derived from another publication. Today, this week, that is, Mr. Gregg admitted to the Post that he plagiarized the story and said he takes full responsibility. He also apologized to the Post editors and its readers. So, it's not just the New York Times, ladies and gentlemen. New York Post owned by Rupert Murdoch? Yes, it is. Thanks for pointing that out. An Argentinian women's magazine had to publish an apology after issuing advice which led more than 100 microwave ovens to explode. Claudia magazine said women could restore old bottles of nail varnish by putting them in a microwave oven for 3 minutes. But many of the women who tried it found the chemical reaction caused their microwave ovens to explode. The magazine received more than 100 complaints. Just a way of finding out if people are reading, I bet. Dateline Cannes, U.S. director Vincent Gallo is so hurt by the scathing reaction to his film The Brown Bunny that he has vowed to make it his last movie. I'll never make another movie again. I mean it, Gallo told Reuters after his road movie had a disastrous reception at the Cannes Film Festival, and he was booed at a press conference. Being booed at was not much fun. It's really not very nice that people are so nasty. I'm very disappointed, he said. Going through what he says is the worst week in his life, he has also apologized to those who financed the film. It is a disaster of a film. And it was a waste of time, he says. I apologize to the financiers. But it was never my intention to make a pretentious film, a self-indulgent film, a useless film, an unengaging film, unquote. Critics guffawed openly at the screening of The Brown Bunny, which Gallo wrote, directed, produced, and starred in, and groaned at the highly graphic oral sex scene at the end. Many found the long driving scenes interminable and the symbolic use of a toy rabbit silly. Dateline Athens, the French embassy in Athens has apologized to 2004 Olympic Games organizers following a row with a French cultural institution over what they regarded as an insult to their ability to host the event. An embassy, French embassy spokesman, told reporters the apology was made on Friday after Greek media reported that one subject in the oral section of a French exam for the French Institute was the proposition that, quote, it is ridiculous to hold the 2004 Olympics in Athens. Athens, Delph 1, is an exam for elementary language skills and is generally taken by 13 to 16-year-olds. An Athens organizing committee statement said the selection of the subject was unfortunate, to say the least, and threatened to sabotage France's Olympic aspirations. France, Paris, has announced its bid for the 2012 Olympics. The French embassy and institute apologized, but pointed out the exam was just meant to test language skills, to examine candidates' knowledge of the French language, and under no circumstances to express any judgment on the holding of the Olympic Games. France making friends wherever they go. Dateline Australia, the New South Wales government has launched an inquiry into the way the Red Cross promoted its fundraising and distributed donations to victims of the Bali bombings. The move comes as the Red Cross issued an unprecedented apology to the victims and the donors, saying it regretted misleading them over where money would be spent. Does this sound familiar? Ring a post-9/11 bell, ladies and gentlemen. Just checking. Attention span, you know. Attention span check, ladies and gentlemen. As I say, I think we've got fine attention spans. I just think it's the executives that have gone hummingbird on us. The developments follow public anger over revelations that only about 4 million of the 14 million collected had so far reached victims, and that three ambulances the Red Cross said it had delivered to Bali last month had not arrived. The Minister for Gaming and Racing, don't know how he gets involved in this, confirmed that his department had last week begun looking at the Red Cross's fundraising and promotion. The New South Wales Charitable Fundraising Act effectively ensures that all money collected must go to the stipulated cause or used to promote it. Breaches carry a fine of $5,500 or 6 months in jail. The Red Cross is deeply concerned about and regrets any confusion and any distress caused to victims or donors, said its Secretary General Martine Letts. Our intention was never to mislead those who donated so generously to the fund, and we are deeply regretful. The message we wanted to convey to the public who gave so generously to the appeal was that we could keep administration costs under 10% of total funds raised. They have, in fact, been kept to less than 3%. Ms. Letts blamed the Indonesian manufacturer for the ambulance fiasco, said they would be delivered by the end of the month. Victims of the bombing said the Red Cross apology did not go far enough. What apology does, really? Also from Australia, two passenger planes narrowly avoided a mid-air collision over North Queensland, and another two were directed several hundred feet below their lowest safe altitude after supervisors from Townsville's Air Traffic Control Center were sent to Iraq, prompting accusations that pilots and passengers have been left vulnerable in Australia's rush to join the U.S.'s post-war effort. Well, there's no apology. Oh, yes, the Townsville supervisors have rung several times to apologize and fully accept they have a problem. So they're apologizing for that. Those, ladies and gentlemen, would be the apologies of the week, and it would be a copyrighted feature. Thank you so much. Don't know what I'm thanking you for. I guess just listening. Thanks for listening.
This magic box is full of lights and all the songs that'll rock the night. We got lots of change. Your aim is true. Just press and play. Cause I love the way you slide your shoes. Jukebox mama, jukebox mama, jukebox mama.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Central Intelligence Agency announced that it's going to study the intelligence that was provided to the administration before the war in Iraq began. This was requested by Don Rumsfeld, same Don Rumsfeld, last October, but it's going to examine it now in the wake of the war. Maybe, you know, to find out whether those solid intelligence estimates of weapons of mass destruction may have been spiked, dosed in some way. What do you think? The Washington Post started the week by reporting that military officers, administration officials, and defense experts with peacekeeping experience from the 1990s were mystified by how and why senior military and civilian leaders at the Pentagon were caught unaware of the need to quickly make the transition from war fighting to security with adequate force. Quote, somewhere behind the combat forces should have been somebody in large numbers who were going to do public security, says William Dirch, a peacekeeping expert at the Stimson Center. It's so elemental from looking at dozens of conflicts, you can't do anything without security. Defense experts inside and outside the Pentagon say military planners were clearly influenced by the Pentagon's belief, expressed by Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, that U.S. forces would be welcomed as liberators. They also point to the Bush administration's professed antipathy to peacekeeping and nation-building by the military. Of course, there's still problems with security in Iraq. The United States has just this weekend paid for the first time since April the workers in the electricity industry. Paid their salaries. They haven't been paid. Might that explain why it's taken so long to turn the electricity on in Iraq? Oh, the check-cutting machine just arrived. But, yes, the new Iraq may be Iran. The Washington Post closes the week by reporting the Bush administration, alarmed by intelligence, here we go again, suggesting that al-Qaeda operatives in Iran had a role in the May 12th suicide bombings in Saudi Arabia, has suspended once promising contacts with Iran, and appears ready to embrace an aggressive policy of trying to destabilize the Iranian government. Regime change. Ladies and gentlemen. There's no view like Deja. British forces in the Iraqi port of Qasr have canceled elections that would have been the first attempt at a democratic election in post-Saddam Iraq. Reasons for the cancellation were said to be disorder at poll booths, where voting slips had failed to arrive, and scant publicity for the event. The elections have now been postponed indefinitely. The Daily Telegraph of Britain learned that council members, the interim council, had nominated themselves or family members to run for election, that only a small proportion of the town's 45,000 inhabitants had registered to vote. Hey, based on those criteria, let's cancel the elections in Florida, too. What do you say? The chief UN weapons inspector, remember Hans Blix, said he was starting to suspect that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction and that his teams remain ready to help in the country if required. I am obviously very interested in the question of whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction. I am beginning to suspect there possibly were none, he said in an interview with a Berlin newspaper. If that were the case, he said, Iraq's evasive behavior in recent years could be due to Saddam Hussein's fixation with Iraqi honor and wish to dictate the conditions under which people could enter the country. For that reason, he said no in many situations and gave the impression he was hiding something, added Blix. Gee, where was that theory floated on the radio 3 weeks ago? There's a British colonel under investigation for possible war crimes. We'll get to that maybe next week. British troops were sent to fight the war in Iraq ill-equipped for the desert, the new commandant of Britain's land forces acknowledged. Major General Peter Wall's frank admission about the poor supply of desert boots, combat clothing, and other basic equipment was the first time a senior member of the British military has confirmed what is self-evident throughout southern Iraq. This according to the London Times. We had that story a few weeks back about British soldiers borrowing boots dropped by Iraqi soldiers because they were better than the British boots. The United States, according to the Observer newspaper, is illegally holding thousands of Iraqi prisoners of war and other captives without access to human rights officials at compounds close to Baghdad airport. The International Committee of the Red Cross so far has been denied access to what the organization believes could be as many as 3,000 prisoners held in searing heat. The Telegraph of Britain thinks the smoking gun has been found. British military officers have uncovered an attempt by Saddam Hussein to build a missile capable of hitting targets throughout the Middle East. Plans for the surface-to-surface missile were one of the regime's most closely guarded secrets, were unknown to United Nations weapons inspectors. But they were, apparently, according to the Telegraph, just plans. The United States believes that the two mobile laboratories military troops have found were, in fact, used for making biological weapons, although there is no evidence linking them. But intelligence analysts say, well, we've gone through all the other possible uses, and we don't think those were what they were using it for. Faced with a heavily armed population and a severe crime wave, U.S. forces in Iraq outlined a new weapons policy that bans automatic and heavy weapons. In response, the National Rifle Association is flying Wayne LaPierre over there, I would think. That's not in the story, but hey, isn't the NRA fighting an assault weapon ban in the United States? Yes, they are. Iraqis will be able to register small-caliber arms to keep in their businesses or homes, but will not be able to carry them outside. Register firearms? The United States? Are you kidding me? American defense chiefs have banned the French from two international military exercises in retaliation for their opposition to the war in Iraq, in what the Americans describe as a re-examination of their military activities. Also warned France, Donald Rumsfeld has, that the United States military will scale down its participation in this year's Paris Air Show. Says a French think tank student of international politics, Washington won't accept the slightest contradiction. They think anyone with a political position different to theirs and willing to defend it needs to be made to feel guilty. Now the French belly aching. And the man who wrote, you have heard excerpts from the Eurovision Song Contest in this program before. That's generated the largest amount of negative mail ever received by this broadcast. You know that it's my contention that this is metaphor for the new Europe and the old Europe joining together into one big old singing Europe. Anyway, last night was the latest edition of the Eurovision Song Contest. The United Kingdom's entry got zero votes. People in the participating countries vote via telephone during the telecast. The man who wrote the United Kingdom's Eurovision entry has blamed Britain's isolationist stance over Iraq for his song coming in last, failing to score a single point. Pop duo Gemini did not impress the judges with their single, Cry Baby. The UK usually enjoys a prominent place in the contest. Its lowest place had previously been 16th, and it has never been among the least three favorite countries to score in the event. The song was written by Martin Isherwood, head of music at Sir Paul McCartney's Liverpool Institute of the Performing Arts. That's where Sir Paul went to school, and he doesn't own it. He insisted the song was great and that the competition itself was a complete and utter lottery and extremely political. The BBC's host also said the UK was suffering from post-Iraq backlash. As a country, says the songwriter Isherwood, I think we paid the price last night. He said Gemini's performance was fantastic and had electrified the audience in the Latvian capital of Riga. You want to see how fantastic it was? Here it is from the Eurovision Song Contest. Gemini doing Cry Baby. You be the judge. Well, you get the idea. They finally found the key. But it took a while, and that's supposed to be the politicization of the Eurovision Song Contest. Maybe it's a metaphor still. Ladies and gentlemen, three members of the Bush administration have announced their intention to depart. Ari Fleischer, the president's press secretary, just got married. He wants to depart. Mitch Daniels, the president's budget director, he's gone. And Christy Todd Whitman, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, has resigned, saying she wants to spend more time with her family. According to the New York Times, while she appeared to be a team player, she was burdened by the perception that the administration wouldn't not let her be. Colin Powell once called her the administration's wind dummy. It's a military term for when you're over a battle zone and you don't know what the winds are. You push the dummy out the door and see what happens to it, he explained. Nonetheless, the Bush administration got its tax cut through Congress, got its new UN Security Council resolution through the UN Security Council. Maybe some pride being reflected over the phone lines from Camp David to Kennebunkport. What do you think?
Hello.
Hey, 41. Happy Memorial Day. Watching a race? I'm watching the golf.
Hey, Sprout, don't come to Kennebunkport to look at television, as you know. Come for the boating and the fishing. Watching somebody fish from my boat right now.
Now, point well taken, sir. Just a little excited is all.
Yeah? About the golf? The girl's out, right?
Yeah, Ari Fleischer said it was obvious she had a problem with her putts.
Mm.
And then he said, get it? So I guess it's a joke, too.
Well, it's this Gloria Steinem, Gloria Allred world we're living in.
Well,
maybe it's just all the women named Gloria.
But no, not excited about the golf. It's good, but no siree. Excited about the week, excited about the world, excited about being able to say to the good Lord, as I did to the crew of the USS Abraham Lincoln, mission accomplished.
Damn, you are full of yourself.
Look good in the flight suit, didn't I? Look kind of well-equipped, didn't I?
Well, read that you had an ex-heavy metal roadie on your advance staff. Figured out the rest.
But, yeah, I know pride goeth before a fall, but it sure seems like if you're a proud man and you just accomplished both a very quick deposition of the Iraqi madman and the passage of, wow, another tax cut, both things a certain former president's wise men said were impossible, that you'd be
very proud.
Yeah, lost the thread of that for a second. So I know this is rough for you, but
nothing's rough for me except for watching the gloating. That's painful.
Hey, we had a no-gloating policy regarding the war. You know, no victory parades.
No. It's an inner gloating.
Yeah, maybe so. But, you know, if I'd listened to Brent Scowcroft and Lawrence Cheeseburger...
Eagleburger.
Yeah, I call him Cheeseburger. Then Saddam Hussein would still be happily depriving the Iraqi people of their hard-won freedom, and Hans Blix and his crowd would still be nosing around saying, you know, just give us another month.
Oh, look, not attacking you from the left here.
Yeah.
Very well, we're going to find the WMD.
Yeah, and if we don't, so what? You know, we did a good thing. We made a bad man go underground in his own country. You know, I know that comparisons are in video, but...
No, certain former administrations did not unseat Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
He hadn't yet been weakened by 12 years of sanctions. He was still a formidable foe.
You know, your special ops people just didn't carry enough bribing money into the country.
Not going to discuss special ops with you.
I'm cleared now. I'm the president.
Yeah, there's cleared. And there's cleared.
Okay, fair enough, sir. But now read my lips. New tax cuts rolled the Democrats like roadkill on the I-85. You know, managed to...
Know what you're going to say. Managed to starve the beast a little more.
A lot more. You know, these tax cuts are going to expire the day pigs fly a kite.
A little like being back with the Reagan crowd, hearing talk like that.
Thank you.
Didn't mean it as a compliment.
The size of the non-defense side of this government is going to be constrained into the indefinite future. Yes, sir, if I was a prideful man, I would be a proud man.
Never said wasn't proud of you.
Okay.
Okay, what?
That's it?
That's what? Hey, 43, you've got some folks jumping ship. Maybe it's not quite the time to be pounding your chest, you know? Maybe Ari Fleischer and Christy Whitman and Mitch Daniels are telling you something. Maybe they're the canaries.
And what does that make me? The cat?
Makes you the coal mine.
Hey, 43, play fair here, sir. How many guys had left your shop by this point? Enough to start half a dozen conservative think tanks with plenty left over for a Rangers farm team.
Different. We were running a loose ship where cabinet members had the freedom to...
Hey, 41, yeah. If cabinet members want that kind of freedom, they can go to Iraq.
Okay, but you're running a tight ship,
yeah.
And when three people jump that ship the same week, it's called...
It's called shove it all into the news cycles leading up to the Memorial Day weekend when nobody gives a flying fish who's where in Washington.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of folks in the Republican Party who think Governor Whitman was hung out to dry more often than Annika Sorenstam's deodorant pads.
Look, the woman took a job she knew was going to be a lightning bolt in this administration. Then she gets struck by lightning a few times, and suddenly she decides that she wants to spend more time with the... Whose family was it?
Hers.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Mitch Daniels, he's going to go run for governor of Indiana. He needs his space, and Ari Fleischer, hey, he just got married. He needed to be out of the public eye for a little while just to see if the hair plugs take.
Okay, so we're not looking at the unraveling of the famous Bush 43 administration discipline?
Don't think so. You know, it's like Karen Hughes says, you can leave Team Bush, but Team Bush never leaves you.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, you know, she leaves and we miss how many steps?
None.
Yeah, so I don't know. A dad looks at all this, and he thinks to himself...
Look, 43, no father likes to see his son outdo him at anything. You fight off that moment as long as you can. And then...
Yeah?
Well, we're not nearly there yet. No need to think the unthinkable. So listen, 43...
Yeah.
Got a date with a bluefish, so...
Hey, we got a unanimous Security Council resolution endorsing our administration of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Colin's a good man. Talk to you soon, 43.
Yeah, say hello to Mom, 41.
Will do.
Podem ver coisas que só o coração pode entender. Fundamental é mesmo o amor, é impossível ser feliz sozinho. O resto é mar, é tudo que eu não sei contar. São coisas lindas que eu tenho pra te dar. Fundamental é mesmo o amor, é impossível ser feliz sozinho. Da primeira vez era cidade, da segunda o cais e e a eternidade. Agora eu já sei da onda que seguiu no mar e das estrelas que esquecemos de contar. O amor se deixa surpreender enquanto a noite vem nos envolver. Vou te contar, os olhos já não podem ver coisas que só o coração pode entender. Fundamental é mesmo o amor, é impossível ser feliz sozinho. O resto é mar, é tudo que eu não sei contar. São coisas lindas que eu tenho pra te dar. Fundamental é mesmo o amor, é impossível ser feliz sozinho. Da primeira vez era a cidade, da segunda o cais e a eternidade. Agora eu já sei da onda que seguiu no mar e das estrelas que esquecemos de contar. O amor se deixa surpreender enquanto a noite vem nos envolver.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program does return. Yes, it does, next week at the same time. See, almost everything happens when you want it to. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the world via the internet on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like the new Iraq being right here, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Playlist information is available for this broadcast at harryshearer.com. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.